Practicing medicine by the book or by the hospital protocol works most of the time. The exceptions, though, can be pretty scary. For instance, adverse drug reactions kill 100,000 Americans annually. But what if there were a way to find out ahead of time which drugs might be dangerous for you? Richard Wenschelbaum, a professor of pharmacology at the Mayo Clinic, is leading an effort to do just that. It's called pharmacogenetics. Wenschelbaum told Steve Paulson it's an outgrowth of the 21st century explosion in drug therapies.
I've been teaching medical students at Mayo for nearly 30 years, and what they take for granted today represents drugs that just weren't available when I started teaching these medical students, not even to mention the time prior to that I was in medical school. So that, I think what both the medical students and the public at large fails to realize is that we can do things medically today that we could never do before. But what that means is that these drugs, which make it possible to take diseases like childhood leukemia, the most common cancer of children, and cure 85% of these children who, when I was in medical school, uniformly and tragically all died, means that the drugs that we use to do that can do great good, but they also are very powerful and in a few patients can do great harm. What we don't or haven't understood is why, when we use exactly the same dose of these drugs in a group of people, most of them will do fine. Some won't have the desired effect, and if we're treating a disease like leukemia, that's a tragedy. And some, the drugs will have too much effect. We'll get an adverse response, an excessive response, and the drugs can actually put the patient's life at risk.
Can you give me an example of how this would work, why the particular genetics of one person would respond to a drug in one way and not the same way in other people?
Absolutely. And the example I used from leukemia wasn't chosen randomly. It was chosen because work that we began here at Mayo 20 years ago, we were trying to understand why some children with leukemia have these serious adverse responses to these wonderful drugs that cure so many of the rest of the kids. What we found was that there's a common genetic variation in one of the pathways that the body uses to get rid of one of the major drugs that's used to treat childhood leukemia. So that inadvertently, because of this genetic variation, we were giving too much of the drug to some of these children. It's about one out of every 300 children who genetically gets two copies of a gene so that their body makes a variant form of the enzyme that the body uses to get rid of this drug. Those kids, we can treat with the drugs, but at one-tenth the standard dose. That is, we individualize today or tailor the therapy based on their ability, their body's ability genetically, to get rid of the medication.
Give me a few other examples of common drugs that are out there that may have damaging effects.
Well, the place that this is most important, obviously, is when we're using potentially powerful and therefore potentially very dangerous drugs, such as those that are used to treat cancer. So that another similar example relates to a drug called 5-fluorouracil, which is used to treat breast cancer and colon cancer. As a result of a tragedy which occurred about 15 years ago when a woman with breast cancer was treated with, quote, standard doses of 5-fluorouracil, developed profound toxicity, in this case leading to coma and eventually to death, we then found that this woman and a small percentage of other people lacked the ability to metabolize 5-fluorouracil. Much more common, but less dramatic, is another enzyme called cytochrome P450-2D6, known to its friends as CYP2D6. About 5 to 10% of a European population has a variant form of this enzyme, so they have low enzyme activity, exactly the sort of thing that I've been talking about. Those people, when treated with codeine, don't get any pain relief. The reason is that codeine requires CYP2D6 to be converted to morphine, so you get pain relief. And for years, certainly when I was in medical school, we thought that some people would take codeine and they would say, I don't get any pain relief. And of course, the assumption was it's, quote, in their head. Well, it wasn't in their head. It was in their liver. Conversely, there are some people who have multiple copies of the 2D6 gene, up to 13 copies, so that they are super metabolizers. The first case of this was a nurse who had depression and was being treated with standard antidepressant medications and was getting no response. And of course, the immediate assumption was that she wasn't taking the medications. But being medically sophisticated, she demanded that they put her, this was at the Karolinska in Stockholm, in Sweden. She demanded that they put her in the hospital and test her. They gave her the medications, and yet she didn't have any blood drug levels. Well, the reason was she had 13 copies of this gene, and her body was gobbling up the drug much faster than anyone else's. Now, that's unusual in Europeans, but in people from East Africa, from Ethiopia or Somalia, those people, 30% of them will have multiple copies of this gene. So standard doses of drugs that would work perfectly well for Europeans are underdosing those patients.
Now, you have said that this whole field of pharmacogenetics will spark a revolution in medicine, that it will really lead to more personalized medicine, so the particular drug treatments will be tailor-made to each person's specific genetic code. Tell me how this would work practically. I mean, when someone checks in to see the doctor and wants a prescription, how will that play out?
Well, the blue sky scenario, or what I think we would all hope someday would happen, is that we would know all of the common genetic variation in all of the genes that encode proteins that are involved in drug response, whether they be proteins that are involved in drug metabolism or transporting drugs in and out of the body, or the targets for drugs, which also can show genetic variation.
So a person's genetic history will be part of their medical report that their doctors will have?
So that the patient will have a blood sample drawn and will be able, using some of these new high-throughput DNA chip technologies, to be able to tell that person, you're just fine for your ability to sulfate drugs, but your ability to methylate is a little low and your cytochrome P450-2D6 is too high. Now, there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of these drug metabolizing enzymes, but it would all be available for you, confidential, so it's between you and your physician would have a little reader that would read this information out as he or she got ready to write your prescription, and your dose would be tailored, or the selection of the drug would be tailored for your own genotype. Now, let me immediately say, there are bits and pieces of that already occurring today, but the blue sky scenario that I've just painted certainly is something that we see in the future, but probably not as far in the future as people of my advanced age would have thought a few years ago.
How far in the future are we talking?
Probably 5 years in the future, a great deal of this information would be a part of standard medical practice.
You sound pretty excited about this. This must be a good time to be a medical researcher.
This is a wonderful time to be a medical researcher, and I've described this to other people as the completion of the Genome Project, all the exciting new technologies we have available, as the equivalent of being a kid in a candy store, because for years we've been dealing with these problems, and now we're beginning to have, this will truly be a period over the next decade or so of a quantum leap with regard to our ability to understand and we hope to treat and prevent disease.
Richard Winchelbaum is a professor of pharmacology at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He spoke with Steve Paulson.